All right, welcome to our next edition to our speaker series at the Pateka Wealth Management Group. And we have a special guest with us today, David Lefkowitz, who is the head of our U.S. Equities CIO Global Wealth Management. David has nearly 30 years of experience as equity analyst, portfolio manager, and strategist. What David does is his responsibility is basically determining what the firm's view of the U.S. equity market is through style, sectors, themes. He's part of our Wealth Management America's Asset Allocation Committee. And before David was at UBS in 2006, he was an analyst and portfolio manager over at Credit Suisse, Goldman Sachs. He's a CFA, chartered financial analyst, real tough test to pass there, and has a history degree at the University of Pennsylvania and a BS degree in economics over at Penn Wharton School of Business. You probably have seen David. He's on regularly on CNBC and Bloomberg and Fox Business and has been quoted numerous times with the Wall Street Journal and Barron. So we're really happy to have David here. And I'm also with our senior portfolio manager on our team, senior member of our team, John Pateka Sr. And David, we're happy to have you.
Yeah, John, it's my pleasure. I'm really happy to be here. There's a lot to talk about, so looking forward to it.
Okay, well, good. Always my favorite that you have a BS in economics. I've always found that funny. But anyway, I always read all your reports, David. I found the report on the equity sectors in depth in December particularly interesting. But we will get to that in a second. First, since you're responsible for setting the entire firm's view on the U.S. equity market, I'd just like to throw that out to you. What are you thinking here before we move on into sectors and so forth?
I think in order to assess the outlook, I think it's helpful to rewind the clock a little bit and zero in on what's been driving this bull market, which is now over 2 years old. We had a bear market in 2022, which sort of bottomed in October of 22. And since then, market's been quite strong. And I think there's been three key factors that have been driving stocks higher over this 2+ year period. And in our view is that those factors are still largely in place. So what are they? You know, one is that we've had durable economic growth. So rewind the clock. A couple of years ago, there were a lot of fears about recession because of Fed rate hikes. Obviously, that didn't come to pass. The economy's been quite resilient, and we've actually seen a reacceleration in profit growth. So we think that driver is still in place. We're going to see good economic growth in 25, and we should see around 9% growth in earnings for the S&P 500 in 25, which is quite a healthy clip. The other factor that's been a key driver is inflation. Back in the summer of 2022, inflation was very lofty at around 9% or so. And over the last couple of years, it's come down, yeah, something in the high twos now, which is obviously a lot better than nine. And that combination of durable growth and falling inflation, that's really very favorable backdrop for stocks. And just to underscore this now, obviously the Fed has started to cut interest rates, and that just really punctuates how favorable the backdrop is. When we look at what happens when the Fed cuts rates in the context of no recession, right? So we looked over the last 50 years, there's been about five times when the Fed has cut interest rates, even though there wasn't a recession. And if you look at what happens to the market from the date of the first rate cut over the next year, S&P 500 rises about 18% on average from the first rate cut to 12 months later. So the Fed first cut in September. So if the averages hold, that means by September of next year, the S&P should be around 6,600. That'd be an 18% gain. But again, just underscores that the environment of durable growth and falling inflation in conjunction with Fed rate cuts, it's a pretty favorable environment. And the last leg of the stool is AI. And obviously, we've seen tremendous growth in AI investment, and we're starting to see the deployment of AI applications. And by our math, roughly 40% of the market cap of the S&P has some element of AI embedded into its valuation. Now, some companies have a lot of it. You can think of the big semiconductor companies, which are very highly contingent on what's happening with AI. Other companies, maybe it's just a small part of their valuation. But the point is that the AI story and the AI investment theme definitely matters. And here also, we continue to be fairly constructive. So if I had to sum it up, the three drivers that have been propelling markets, we think are still propelling markets: durable growth, disinflation / Fed cuts, AI. Now, a lot of this is better reflected in market pricing at this point, but we still think it's a positive driver as we look out over the course of 2025.
David, I just want to let our listeners know, when you break down the sectors of the markets, you break them down in most attractive or attractive, then neutral, then unattractive, then least attractive. Of the sectors, you've only got one as most attractive, and that's information technology. And then attractive, you've got communication services, consumer discretionary, financials, and utilities. Maybe you can comment on some of them as to why they're there and what you're thinking about them. And then anything that is below that, I thought energy is kind of interesting. You're only a neutral on that. So maybe you can touch on this report you did in December here and talk about those things for us.
Yeah, of course. Happy to do it. Yeah, so tech is our most attractive sector. So it's the highest notch in our rating scale. Really, it just comes down to it. We just think, as I sort of indicated at a market level, I think a lot of the trends that have been driving the sector will continue to drive the sector. So we think that there's a good chance that the estimates that the street currently has for some of the AI investment spending, we think there's probably upside to those. So that would benefit some of the big semiconductor companies. So sort of just the AI story, we think, still has further legs. There's still shortages of key components, and that's going to benefit a number of the big components of the tech sector. On top of that, just the adoption of the technology itself is also helping some of the software companies. So we think that will continue. And then we also think we're going to see an improvement in some of the key end markets: smartphones, PCs, servers. So some of the more cyclical parts of tech should get a lift. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that tech sector, you know, some of the highest quality companies in the marketplace, highest returns on capital, highest margins. These are great companies, just very high quality and very good companies that you want good representation in your portfolio. Yeah, other sectors that we currently rate as attractive, which is a notch below most attractive, but we still think there's good upside. So let me just hit on, actually, let me take a step back. I mean, the way we've sort of approached our sector preferences, John, is really, if there's a common thread, I would say we're looking for, or our recommendations reflect where we think there's upside to consensus earnings estimates, or there's just good earnings momentum. And I think that's one of the common threads you'll see throughout our recommendations. So, for instance, communication services, where we have an attractive view, that is basically it's the mega cap internet companies. You know, just think digital advertising is still very strong, benefits from AI. So we think there's good potential there. Consumer discretionary is another sector that we rate as attractive. That there also, some of the big components of that sector do have some AI tailwinds. Plus, this should be a sector that benefits from Fed rate cuts that should help support consumer spending. And then financials, where also what an attractive sector. This is probably the easiest way to get exposure to the deregulation that we think we'll see under the Trump administration. So financials, very heavily regulated, obviously banks, very heavily regulated. And we think we'll see some loosening of regulation there. And that should lead to some pickup in activity, we think, across a lot of the lines of business that the banks are involved in, whether it be business lending, mergers and acquisitions, capital markets activity, and potentially return of capital to shareholders as a result. So we like that story, and just Fed cuts in general should spur some activity as well. And then I would say the last sector, utilities, where because of so much power demand from AI data centers, we think longer term earnings power for the utilities companies is likely moving higher to reflect the AI power demand. So everything else we're neutral. And you highlighted energy. It's getting a little bit more interesting, especially after, you know, we're recording this mid-December. We've seen a little bit of a sell-off in the energy sector in the last few weeks. But our overarching concern is that we just have a lot of supply out there, right? I mean, OPEC has a few million barrels that they're withholding from the market. So it's hard to see how oil prices really move higher. Now, there are scenarios, right? I mean, if the Trump administration really cracks down on Iranian barrels, that could tighten the market a little bit. You know, at the end of the day, it's all about the oil price. That's going to be the primary driver of the energy sector. Our point here is that just with a lot of supply out there, we think there's sort of a cap on the upside on oil prices.
David, you mentioned Fed cuts. It's probably a decent time to segue since today at 2 o'clock, they make a decision. People are all over the place for next year. My personal opinion, if they don't do anything dramatic, whether they do 2 cuts or 4 cuts, I don't think it should matter. What do you say as far as all that? Is it all that important if they just stay with the trend and whether it's 1 cut or 4 cuts? Give us your opinion.
I think the easiest way to put this is the market wants the right policy. And the market's assessment of the right policy, you know, changes based on the data. So recently we've seen stronger economic growth, a touch hotter inflation. I mean, nothing that's too serious. It's just a little bit on the firmer side. So right now the market has changed its view on the appropriate path for monetary policy. And look, everybody thinks we'll get the rate cut today. The market is fully expecting a rate cut. So I fully expect that's what we'll see. I think the debate is going to be more about what happens in 25. And right now the market is pricing in roughly 2 more rate cuts in 2025. To your point, John, if it ends up being 4, the Fed would only do that if the economy needed it. So I don't think it matters too much. I think the important point here is that I think the Fed is in a pretty good place, that they have plenty of scope to reduce rates if they need to. But if they don't need to, if the economy is doing fine, then that should be fine also. And I think the other important point here is that we've already had a few Fed cuts. We're going to get another one today. That's already adding some stimulus to the economy. And, you know, if we look at things like financial conditions and how easy or difficult is it for businesses and consumers to get access to capital, it's gotten much easier. So that's going to support economic growth in the months ahead, regardless of what they end up doing over the course of 25. So I think it's a pretty supportive environment, just given kind of what they've already done.
I want to talk about Trump is in, and you see the direction of his appointees. And I want to know your thoughts on that. You always hear people talking about tariffs and so forth. Maybe you can just give us your thoughts on that.
Sure. So in terms of Trump administration, I would highlight three buckets of policy that we're watching. One is, let's start with fiscal policy. So taxes and spending. I mean, this is going to take a longer period of time for this to get worked out. There's going to have to be a lot of negotiation within the Republican Party. It's going to be very expensive to extend the Trump tax cuts. It's going to cost, if they want to extend them for 10 years, that's going to be close to $4.5 trillion over a 10-year period. So that doesn't leave a lot of space for other stuff. So it's going to be, I think, a pretty lengthy negotiation. And as we know, Congress doesn't like to act unless they have a deadline. In fact, most of us don't like to act unless we have a deadline. Certainly that's true of myself. So the deadline is the end of next year, end of 2025, when the Trump tax cuts do expire. So I suspect it's going to take most of next year for Congress to kind of figure this out. So I think that goes to the back burner from a market's perspective. The second bucket is deregulation. That's also just going to take more time. We have to get new heads of agencies in place. They have to get confirmed. Then they have to go through rulemaking processes. So this is all going to take time. And frankly, these are kind of like the tectonic plates that are moving in the background I doubt there's going to be any kind of big bang that is dramatic, because we're talking about, you know, regulations that are maybe large in aggregate, but are maybe small in terms of individual regulations here and there. So I don't know if that's going to be such a market moving event, but clearly deregulation would be welcomed by equity investors. So then that leaves us with probably what ends up getting focused on first, because it's easier to do, is tariffs. So we wouldn't be surprised to see Trump, you know, one of his first 100 day or even 10 days is some comments on tariffs. And this is where the president can act somewhat unilaterally and doesn't have some of the process restrictions that we talked about in some of those other areas. So now I think it's important to bear in mind, look, tariff discussions and implementation can lead to some volatility in the markets, that's for sure. But I think Trump is very aware of, let's just say he's very attuned to the stock market. Right? He was just down at the New York Stock Exchange last week. I think that's a clear indication of how important he views the market to just gauging the success of his administration. So I don't think we're going to see tariff policies that really jeopardize the bull market. And in fact, it'll be consistent with what happened in Trump 1.0. Whenever the market was getting nervous about his tariff discussions, he sort of backed off. So look, could it cause some volatility? Will there be tariffs? Will there be threats of tariffs? I think that's probably pretty likely. Will it cause some volatility? Probably. Will it really derail the bull market? Probably not. So I think it's important to keep the bigger picture in mind.
Well, in another report you guys put out, you gave your views on small and mid caps. You know, there is a thought that with deregulation and lower interest rates, that small and mid caps should do quite well. Maybe you can just comment on that, please.
In general, that is a true statement, John, that lower interest rates and deregulation probably help smaller companies more. But we also want to be cognizant of the fact that smaller companies tend to be lower quality, they have more debt, they're not as consistent in terms of their delivery of results, in terms of the stability of cash flows and things like that. And, you know, in our work, we've pointed out that they tend to do the best when economic growth is accelerating. So that's not quite the environment we're expecting in 25. We think we're just going to see kind of consistent economic growth. If we put it all together, macro environment is not the sweet spot, but we could get some deregulation and some lower rates. So net-net, it sort of leaves us thinking, yeah, you know, it's not a bad place to be, but we still have a preference for large caps. So, you know, I think small and mid goes up, but we think large may do a little bit better, just given where we are in the economic cycle.
Okay. Before we get into the risks to the market, I want to see your personal views on AI. We talked to someone in the past, and he surprised me when I asked him, what do you think is going to happen in AI? And he talked about how it's going to affect education and all of that, and it's saying things I really hadn't thought of. Anything like that, that your personal view on how this is going to work out? I know your personal view that it's very early and they're still spending fortune on these data centers and so forth, but just tell me what you think in general, because this stuff's like a big collage to most people.
Yeah, look, it's hard to have a crystal ball, John, for perspective. I think looking at the internet rollout is helpful by way of analogy, right? So the internet really started getting going in the mid-90s, but Google wasn't founded until the early 2000s. Same with Facebook. That was a good 5-7 years after the real kickoff of the internet adoption. And some of the early winners in the internet adoption, like Cisco and even and Microsoft, were not faded very quickly during the bust. So I think we have to acknowledge that, look, it's very early in the rollout of AI. And I think AI has tremendous potential. I think it likely will be very widely adopted in pretty much everything we do. But I think we have to be humble in sort of being able to predict exactly how it's going to play out and who the winners will be. But I do think, yeah, just give you a couple examples. I mean, this does seem to be somewhat of a revolution in terms of software development. I mean, Google has talked about the fact that 25% of their code is now generated by AI. So imagine the efficiencies that are coming from that. And we've heard that from a number of different companies as well, but Google was the most explicit in terms of quantifying it. Salesforce.com is rolling out what they call agents, and they're seeing basically these are sort of customer service chatbots, but much more advanced, and seeing really impressive results with that. So I think, you know, this could revolutionize just customer service in general. You talk to some of the financial companies, they're using it for fraud detection, document review. You know, it has implications in cybersecurity. I mean, it just like, it touches so many things, and we're so early in the rollout of this, right? To your point, I mean, how does it affect education? I just think it's tough to know. And these models are just going to get better, and the applications that are riding on top of the models are going to get better as well. And so, yeah, in 5 to 10 years, which is, you know, we try to take that view. What's the world going to look like in 5 to 10 years? I think the adoption of this stuff is going to be quite pervasive, and people are just going to be using it much more widely than we currently are. Hard to know exactly how that plays out, but I think that's why we've been focused on the companies that are building the infrastructure right now, because that seems to be the clearest path to monetization at this point.
Yeah, you guys have been right on that. I think it's interesting. It's all the build out. We don't even have enough electricity to do it. But your Facebook and Google not being brought in till the 2000s is spot on. So I think a little patience might be necessary on this AI for the general public anyway and investors. The next thing I want to say is that, and I want to wrap it up with my questions on risk. What do you see? I mean, I can see that, like you said, at the end of the year, maybe they get the tax cuts, but if Congress can't get together and get something like that, that would be a big risk. What do you see in risk out there that can throw us off? What should I look for?
I would focus on, and we are focused on, anything that really derails those three drivers that we let off the conversation. Anything that derails the growth outlook, anything that changes the inflation outlook to be less favorable. Look, I mean, I think there is a risk. It's certainly not the base case, but will AI end up disappointing? You know, when I think about what could drive risks around those three buckets, I think on the growth side, I think things should be fine, right? We're going to have deregulation. We've got the Fed cutting. That's not typically an environment where you'd worry about economic growth. So I think that's fine. I think the bigger risk is maybe on inflation, you know, especially if we have tariffs, how inflationary are they? But again, I think Trump was partly elected on the fact that the cost of living has gone up so much in the last few years. And I don't think he's going to want to pursue policies that really make the cost of living even more challenging. So, but look, if the economy is just running hotter, that could put some inflation pressures back in the system. And that could have Fed implications. They may decide that, hey, wait a minute, maybe we should actually start raising interest rates. Again, not our base case, but I would say that is a big risk. If in the middle of the year we woke up and they're like, hey, maybe we need to reverse those cuts. Yeah, that would be a pretty dramatic change in the environment. So that would be a risk. Again, not our base case. And then on AI, as I mentioned, there's a lot of capital being deployed. The return on this is unknown. We think it will be attractive. We think there will be companies that make a lot of money on this technology, but it's still early days and a lot of unknowns. So I do think that is a risk, but we don't see that as a, again, not in our base case. So, and then obviously, look, then there's, you know, as you mentioned, John, like if they don't extend the tax cuts, that doesn't seem very likely, or at least in some fashion, extending some of the cuts, that could either be a little bit of a fiscal cliff. The other thing I like to look at is where are the imbalances in the economy? And right now, I don't really see many. Private sector balance sheets, in other words, consumers, businesses, there's not a lot of debt. Consumers are generally good shape from a debt perspective, so are businesses. Investment spending isn't overly excessive throughout the economy, unlike what we saw in, say, the lead up to the housing bust, where there was like way too much investment. And same thing in the late 90s in the dot-com period where way over investment. You know, AI could get there, but I don't think we're there yet. I mean, the biggest imbalance is probably just government debt, which will be part of the conversation increasingly going forward over the next several years. But I do think the markets are going to start to want to get some comfort that the debt and deficits will get a little bit better controlled. We're going to spend probably $1 trillion on interest expense, federal government, in this coming fiscal year. That's more than the military spending, which is about $850 billion. So I think that's the one area that, you know, is maybe not getting enough attention. I don't think it's something that ends up being a crisis, but I do think at some point the markets are going to want a little bit more comfort that there's a path to sustainability there.
Thanks, David. We're coming to the end of our call here and just wanted to get your final thoughts if we missed anything as we begin to wrap up.
No, I think we covered a lot of great topics and appreciate the questions. And maybe just to finish where we started, you know, think the environment remains generally constructive. And we think equities, U.S. equities, will be about 9 or 10% higher over the course of 2025. But it's never a straight line. And certainly there will be bouts of volatility. But those three drivers that we talked about, growth, inflation, and AI, we think are still the key drivers and pointing in an upward direction.
Great. Thanks, David. And as we wrap up, for those listening to the podcast, please make sure to, if you haven't already done so, please subscribe to the Pateka Wealth Management Podcast, either on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And that way you'll get the latest episode right to your device. And David, we want to thank you again for joining us today and giving us your thoughts on what you see out there.
Thank you, David. That was really good.
Yeah, my pleasure. Great talking with you guys. And happy holidays. Best to you and your families.
All right. Thanks, David.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.